The politics surrounding what and how much we eat can take you down a rabbit hole. Food politics can be controversial and confusing.
So, why not explore food politics with cartoons? With one image, you can absorb complicated conceptual information.
And that's what our next guest says. Her new book is An Illustrated Guide to Food Politics.
You can join in this conversation. What do you think about our food policy here in the United States? What's wrong with the U.S. food system, or what's right? What do you think we should change, or what's working and we should keep it the way it is? You can call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send an email, talk@WPR.org.
Marian Nessel joins us now. She is the author of Eat, Drink, Vote, An Illustrated Guide to Food Politics. She's a professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health, and a professor of sociology at New York University. Marian, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, let's start with a cartoon on the cover of your book. It's a piece of pizza showing with the caption, New Congressional School Lunch Food Pyramid. Why did you choose this image for the book's cover?
Well, there were a couple of reasons. One is because I think it's really funny. And it was such a commentary on how Congress has gotten involved in micromanaging the Department of Agriculture school lunch rules. So it was sort of an instantaneous explanation of why food is political, which a lot of people really don't understand. And then the colors matched with the design.
Well, thank you for being honest with us.
The design was a big issue in this book.
Sure. But there's also a story that goes along with that piece of pizza that you tell toward the beginning of your book about how Congress did get involved in pizza and school lunches. Tell us that story, would you?
Yeah, to me it was just a shocking story because the Department of Agriculture had worked with the Institute of Medicine, a think tank in Washington, which produced a couple of really big reports on how to make school lunches healthier and set up nutrition and food standards for the school lunches. And the Department of Agriculture did that, and when it issued its rules, one of the things the USDA was trying to do was to encourage kids to try different kinds of vegetables. So they wanted to restrict the number of times that potatoes would be served during the week. So a potato wouldn't be the only vegetable. That was one. The other one was that they had made an exception for tomato paste so that the tomato paste that was put on pizza counted as a vegetable serving, even though it was at a very, very small volume. And they wanted to raise the volume to make the tomato sauce be the same as all the other vegetables, have the same volume requirements. And so they put those rules through little thinking that it would require Congress to get involved. And Congress, in a spending bill, put in a couple of provisions saying, you aren't going to do either one of those things.
Well,
and micromanage the Department of Agriculture's rules. And this was done at the request of the companies that make pizza for school lunches. And they wanted to be able to say, see, these are vegetable servings. And also the main potato growers
didn't
want any restrictions on potatoes.
Yeah, the details of that story, wasn't it something like to count as a vegetable, you needed half a cup of tomato sauce or more, and then, you know, people fought back. And so then we have soggy pizza, and then you got
right.
it embedded in all the politics that you talk about there, and now a pizza is a vegetable.
Now, you know, pizza serving counts as a vegetable.
And then on the other hand,
by an act of Congress.
Right, by an act of Congress, which is good news to me, but I don't know if that's going to help my health any or my children's health. So how do you think food got to be so political in America?
Oh, the money, because of the money that's in it. It's a $1 trillion a year business. And any time, I mean, it really wasn't a problem until obesity became a problem. And once obesity became an issue, particularly childhood obesity, the nutrition messages had to change. The nutrition messages for decades were eat more and eat a variety of foods, and they had to change to eat less and choose some foods rather than others because you want healthier ones and don't eat some kinds of foods. And the minute that happened, the companies that made products that were on the don't eat side or the eat less side didn't like it because their bottom lines were affected. So it's just as simple as that.
Well, it's an interesting, you know, tangle there, because on the one hand, you have what you're talking about, the money-making interests involved in food production and the food that we eat. And then you've also got this strand of individualism in America where we say, you know, hands off government, I want to decide what I eat, and we don't want the government to have a say. So how do you untangle some of that when you're talking to consumers?
Well, I try to explain the government is already deeply involved in what people eat, and that the food system that we have now did not emerge by accident. People made this food system, and it's changed enormously in the last 25 or 30 years in parallel with rising rates of obesity. The best example that I can give of why personal responsibility doesn't always work in food choice is the research that's now been done on large portions. There's now a substantial body of research that indicates that if you give a person a large portion of food, that person, no matter how self-controlled, will eat more calories from that portion, will take in more calories, and will underestimate the number of calories taken from a large portion, much more than from a smaller portion. So large portions alone are an inducer of eating behavior that most people can't control, even if they want to.
So there's a lot involved here, including psychology. And as far as the government goes, doesn't the government have regulations to help promote healthy foods as well?
Well, it has some regulations. It's got labels on food products. It's got dietary guidelines that are issued every 5 years and that are about as political as anything in food could possibly be, for exactly the reason that I talked about. If a dietary guidelines committee chose to have as a guideline, well, since we're talking about water today in Wisconsin, let's talk about water. Suppose the guideline was, instead of drink more water, it was drink water instead of soda. Then soda companies would be very upset.
Right. And then what happens? I mean, then they get Congress gets backlash
They go to Congress and say, we don't want the government doing this. And Congress acts. That's why the business about the school lunch regulations was so shocking to me, because it meant that a private company could go and lobby Congress, and Congress is busy and doesn't pay attention to the details in spending bills. These bills are enormous, and no single individual in Congress could possibly know everything that's in one of those bills, either the spending bill or the farm bill or any of those bills. They're too big and too complicated. So it's easy to sneak things in without anybody thinking about them, and I think that's what happened here. Or anybody thinking about the implication of Congress micromanaging school lunch standards, which, you know, from my standpoint as a public health nutritionist, makes no sense at all. They don't know anything about nutrition standards.
There's a section in your book about kids' food and how it's a genre unto itself, that certain foods are created to be kids' foods, and then kids want to eat that food. But you beg the question, do kids really want to eat that food, or do they want to eat it because they're told they want to eat it?
Well, it's hard to disentangle that. I don't have small children anymore, but my friends who do tell me that they have 2 or 3 year olds who have never been to McDonald's, have never watched television, because they're those kinds of parents and they don't have television in the house. They've never talked about McDonald's. They've never been to McDonald's. And yet when they drive down a street, their 2 or 3 year old recognizes McDonald's and says, I want to go eat there. And they say, well, how do you know that you want to eat there? Well, because the food's good. How do you know the food is good? Because it is. I mean, this is brilliant marketing, and billions of dollars are spent on trying to get kids to do 3 things, to recognize brands of food like McDonald's, and kids recognize McDonald's everywhere, to ask their parents for the foods, pester their parents is what it's called. And then the third thing is the one that worries me the most, and that is they try to get kids to think that those kinds of foods that are advertised to them, foods in funny shapes and colors in packages with cartoons on them, are foods that are meant for kids. and that that's what kids are supposed to be eating. They're not supposed to be eating the boring foods that their parents are eating. They're supposed to be eating kids' foods, foods made right for them, and that they know more about what they're supposed to be eating than their parents do.
Marion, is this kind of a uniquely American problem, or is this sort of a global food problem now in a lot of developed countries?
Well, it's everywhere and increasing. It's much, much less prominent in countries that have rules and regulations about marketing. But in countries that don't, marketing is very prominent. And most of the American food companies, the big ones, because sales in the United States are relatively flat, have moved their marketing overseas and are marketing, particularly in the wildly, rapidly emerging economies of China, India, and so forth. I mean, that's where it's happening, and with exactly the predictable results that as populations in these countries get a little bit more money and can afford to buy these very attractive, heavily advertised products, they're putting on weight, too.
Well, we're talking right now with Marion Nestle. She's the author of the book Eat, Drink, Vote, an illustrated guide to food politics. She's a professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health at New York University.
And we want to hear from you. You can join the discussion at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Would you want to see laws on marketing of foods to kids? Do you want that restricted? Would you like to see better regulations, a change in regulations on what is and isn't healthy food? How about those big soda bans that they were working on in New York City? Any other changes you'd like to see or success stories of the American food system? Call 800-642-123 or send an email, talk@WPR.org.
That's 1-800-642-1234. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll talk to an expert who questions the benefits of First Lady Michelle Obama's message to drink more water.
But first, we're continuing our conversation about food policy in the United States. We just talked about some of the issues, and now we'll talk about some of the solutions. Our guest is Marion Nestle. She's the author of Eat, Drink, Vote, an illustrated guide to food politics.
And we want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you could change one thing about how we get our food, about laws on food in this country, what would it be? 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Now, Marion, I want to talk about some of the solutions to what we've been describing so far. Obviously, there's a lot of territory here, but if you're going to give consumers a guide to help, you know, fix things, set things right, and make themselves and their families healthier, what would you advise?
Well, the advice about healthy eating is really pretty simple. It's eat more fruits and vegetables and don't eat too much junk food. I mean, it really isn't any more complicated than that. You have to balance calories, too, and the best way to do that is to weigh yourself on a scale. There really isn't any other way to do that. If weight is going up, then you're eating more than you should. It's really, this isn't rocket science. What makes it so complicated and what makes all the complicated messages so confusing to people are all the vested interests in all of this. Anytime you say, don't eat too much junk food, people who make junk food don't like it.
And what about consumers? I mean, how do we feel about it when we hear that, don't eat junk food? I mean, I think everybody knows that.
No, it's not don't eat junk food. It's not don't eat too much junk food. You know, I mean, there's a real difference. And I think that's what there are lots of things about nutrition that I think make it a particularly difficult science, if you want to put it that way. Everybody eats, so everybody has an opinion. And everyone has a lot of personal experience with food. And with whether food makes them feel good, bad, or indifferent. And then there are the marketing messages, and food companies spend probably a total of close to $30 or $40 billion a year on marketing their products. And most of us think that food marketing has no effect on our choices at all. But research shows otherwise. I mean, it really does have an effect. And it has an effect that we're not aware of, and we're not supposed to be aware of it. If it's really good marketing, it slips below any kind of radar of critical thinking. So that makes it difficult. You don't make food choices in a vacuum. You make food choices depending on what's available, what your friends are eating, and what you can afford, and what you like.
So, Marion, if you were queen, would you support a motion from Congress that made it harder for marketers to, you know, to use the fancy techniques that they use to market food to people?
Oh, unquestionably. I would put enormous restrictions on food marketing, especially to children, because there's so much evidence that shows that kids who are not marketed to eat more healthfully. More and more evidence is coming out all the time on that. Excuse me. So that would certainly be something I would do. I would also change the farm bill so that it promotes fruits and vegetables and makes it easier for people to buy fruits and vegetables at a lower cost. I mean, I think there are lots of policy changes that the government could do that would make it much, much easier for people to eat more healthfully.
What about things like, you know, banning ingredients, trans fats, for instance, or giant sodas?
Well, trans fats were a no-brainer. I mean, really, they were. They were artificial. They make no difference. There are lots of substitutes. That was not an anti-obesity intervention. That was a heart disease intervention. And there are lots of substitutes that don't cost any different. It really was so easy to do that in the places where it's been banned, nobody really noticed. That was an easy one. I think the soda cap, which was not a ban, by the way, it was a cap on the, this was Mayor Bloomberg's 16-ounce soda cap. The idea was to make a smaller soda size be the default, and the size that he picked was 16 ounces, which is two standard servings. And the notion was that if people got a 16-ounce soda, that would, for most people, that would really be enough. And anybody who wanted to order more could. You know, sodas didn't used to be this big. Mm-hmm. That's a relatively new innovation.
I wonder if you're optimistic about our chances for making some of these improvements that you're talking about. I look at the success of Michael Pollan, who's gotten a lot of traction with his message, which is very similar to what you're saying here. You know, just eat more fruits and vegetables, eat real food, don't eat too much of it.
Yeah, don't eat anything your grandmother wouldn't recognize.
Right. Do you think that message is getting somewhere in America?
Well, it's certainly getting to young people. I mean, I teach at a university, and so I'm dealing with young people all the time, and I'm enormously heartened by their interest in food, their excitement about it, their wanting to create a food system that's healthier for people and the planet. And in a sense, I wrote this book, or put together this book, I guess is a better way of putting it, to try to reach a larger audience and hopefully of young people.
We've got a comment here from Natalie in Waukesha, who called to say, it's hard to compare product nutrition on foods that have portion sizes on the label. Cereal, for example. I try to read labels, but it's hard to make fair comparisons when trying to figure out nutritional content of the food. It involves a lot of math. Is that something you look at, that we should simplify the labels?
Yeah, it certainly does. The FDA is working on proposals to simplify the label. I think it badly needs doing. And the caller has picked on the most serious issue with food labels, which is the portion size problem. Especially with cereals, where cereal makers are allowed to decide what the portion size is, and they're very, very different, and they have lots of different tiny fractions. So without your calculator sitting right there, it's pretty hard to figure it out. I mean, this is another place where the government could intervene and make something much easier for people, so people could make healthful choices much easier.
Do you think it's important that consumers, when possible, try to pick organic foods over, you know, foods that have been grown with pesticides and other chemicals?
Well, I'm a big proponent of organics because I think there's a real attempt in the organic standards to reduce the use of pesticides and harmful chemicals that are used in food production, and also to replenish the soil and other kinds of requirements that make it much, much better from an environmental perspective. So I'm in favor of it that way. Here again, there's something that the government could do to make the cost of organic food more accessible to people who can't afford it.
So anything else you're going to do to get your message out to young people, as you say, your target audience?
Well, I write a blog. I write an almost daily blog that's open to everybody and that I hope lots and lots of people will use. I try to link to the original documents that are related to an issue I'm going to post about Michelle Obama's water initiative tomorrow. And I'll try to link to all of the relative documents around that. So if anybody's interested in it, they can go to one place and find out everything they need to know very quickly.
And what's the address for that?
That's foodpolitics.com.
Okay, great. Well, Marion, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
I've been talking to Marion Nessel, the author of Eat, Drink, Vote, an illustrated guide to food politics. She's a professor at New York University.
Coming up, a related issue. We'll talk about First Lady Michelle Obama's message during her visit in Wisconsin today. You just heard about that. Drink more water. Will this actually help people? Our next guest has his doubts.
You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.